Good evening. You are listening to The Veterans Voice. We are broadcasting live this evening on 790 KABC in Los Angeles. This is Amanda Manier. I am your host. I am a veteran advocate and the managing attorney at the Veterans Law Group. A little bit about us. We've been practicing VA disability compensation, representing veterans before the VA for over 25 years. It is all we do. One of the great things is that I get to work every single day, not only with veterans as clients, but also paralegals and people in my office, or many of them are veterans, military spouses, or family members of veterans. So if there's anything about my team at the office, it's that they definitely understand what families and veterans and families are going through out there as they navigate the VA process. One of the fun things about this show is that not only do we talk VA disability benefits, but sometimes we highlight veterans and their stories, sometimes talk about organizations and have them on as guests, organizations that are doing unique things in that community to help out veterans and their families. As I mentioned before, this evening we are live and we are taking your calls live. If you have any questions related to veterans claims or just kind of how to navigate the process, we will talk about anything related to that. You can contact us at 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-KABC. You're also more than welcome to submit questions via Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If you search Veterans Law Group, you will find us there. This evening, my co-host, as she joins us now and then, is Star. She is an U.S. Air Force veteran and a paralegal in our office, and currently is operating the role where she's helping to interview potential clients to help kind of gather information and hear their stories and find out whether or not we think that we can help you. So welcome, Star. Thank you for joining me again.
Thank you.
And will you give just a little bit of background of when you served in the U.S. Air Force and where you served, just briefly?
Yes. So I served in the Air Force from October of 2008 till October of 2012. And I was I stayed close to home. I was at Edwards Air Force Base, and I did one tour overseas to the Middle East.
Awesome. And you were security forces, correct?
Correct, yes.
Awesome. So you are a Southern Californian at heart.
Yes, born and raised in San Diego, and the military decided they weren't going to send me very far from home. So I got stuck at Edwards just a few hours away.
Was that a good thing? Was that by choice or something you wanted to do, or would you have preferred to go out?
I would have preferred some other locations. Like, everything I wanted to do was kind of overseas. You know, the whole point in joining the military, part of it, is to see the world. Mm-hmm. But it did help being close to home, because I have, I grew up raised by not only like a single mother, but my grandparents and my grandfather, who was a World War II Vietnam Korea veteran, helped raise me. And so I got to stay home and stay close to them. So it worked out for my benefit.
That's pretty awesome. And as I've mentioned on the show, I am not a veteran myself, but I have been surrounded by them. My uncle was a Vietnam veteran. I just grew up, my mom had a really good job of teaching us as kids, and growing up as the youngest of six children. My brother went into the Air Force for a little while, ended up getting a medical discharge. My mom really just instilled in us a healthy respect for the military, and that it was our job as civilians to make sure you take care of the military. And I, you know, sent care packages overseas. One of my longest friends was somebody who received one of those care packages from when I was like 12 years old, and unfortunately lost his battle to cancer a few years ago. But it's always been something that's very much been in my heart and soul. So being a veteran advocate and being able to do this every single day is such an honor and a privilege for sure. And I'm sure you feel the same way of being able to work with veterans, having been one yourself. You're welcome to chime in.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I love this job so much. And, you know, it kind of just found its way to me when I was going through paralegal school. I didn't actually know that there was law firms and attorneys that handled VA disability appeals. That was something that, you know, isn't usually brought up unless you search the web and kind of have an idea of what you're doing. So I never looked into it. I never realized that there was an appeal part of it. And so while I was going through the paralegal school, that's when they kind of pointed me, because I kept talking about how I was a veteran and, you know, all I wanted to do was help other veterans. And that's how I found Veterans Law Group and got started with you guys. And so it's a job that's rewarding every day. One, because I get to talk to my fellow veterans and kind of stay in touch. And it helps with like just my own healing process. Mm-hmm. But also just by knowing that I can help others.
Yeah,
pointing definitely. Them in the right direction.
And we won't necessarily get into details publicly, but you've been through the disability process. You've been to C&P exams. You've gone through appeals. So you know firsthand of what it's like that our clients are going through and veterans out there are going through. Is it fair to say it's an incredibly frustrating process?
It is an incredibly frustrating process, yes. And it's one that can take a very long time. I think I've been through every part of the VA except up to the Court of Veterans Appeals. So I've been stuck in the system with my own claim, my husband's claim, and my grandfather's claim, helping try to, you know, find the way with all of those. And so I see with even different individuals just that I'm surrounded by and how different claims can be in the process.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're listening in live this evening and have a question about the process or a comment about the process, please reach out to us. The number here to reach us live is 800-222-5222. I also mentioned the social media places where you can submit a question. I might address some of those that I've already answered in our social media, but if they kind of come up to the topic of what we're talking about, feel free to, I might bring those up and just address some of those questions that have come in through there. It looks like we have a question from Max in San Diego. I'm actually broadcasting from San Diego as well. Welcome, Max. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, and good evening. I'll be quick. Sure. My question, I have like a twofer going on. My first question is, I want you to confirm something for me. Mm-hmm. I have an attorney who's represented me for quite some time, and we have gone to the Court of Veterans Appeals. We did not prevail, but we eventually found out how far I could take my case. But recently, I think one of the issues was remanded back from that venue, mm-hmm. back to the board. Okay. And they had suggested that our situation could be resolved at the board. So it's been almost 2 years. Mm. And I said, well, didn't you have other clients that were actually in the same sort of group with me? You know, around the same time level. And I only have the one issue. It mm-hmm. has to do with a compensation issue. It's nothing terribly complicated.
Okay.
But there are not enough judges to look at, to hear these cases at the board.
Yes.
And they've recently hired, I heard back in October or maybe earlier part of the year, that they hired like 32 judges to refortify the people that they lost during the pandemic situation.
Mm-hmm.
And my attorney, he told me, listen, we have a little bit of a problem. You're probably not going to have your case heard for quite some time because the board is putting an emphasis on legacy appeals and mm-hmm. not those that are otherwise not legacy appeals. He said, listen, you have people who are, you know, they've been in the system a lot longer than you have, and they've been waiting years to have their appeals heard. They may be more complex than yours because you only have the one issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like they're going to drag this out for as long as they can until they can not suppress one side of the ledger, which I think are the RAMP appeals, or Rapid right. Appeals Management Program, as opposed to the legacy version.
Yes.
So he said that they squashed that pretty much for the foreseeable future. I just needed you to confirm that, and I've got one other question for you, if you don't mind asking.
Yes. Yeah,
I just wanted you to confirm it.
Sure. It's yes, I can confirm it. However, it's not that they are only working exclusively on legacy. They are working essentially what we call four different dockets right now. Depending upon when your case hit the docket, and that just means it's their caseload, and they get a created docket date and a docket number. They have, last year especially, they did a lot of emphasis, last 2 years, a lot of emphasis on legacy appeals. And so by nature of that, it creates a lopsided, you know. And so for those of you who are kind of new of understanding legacy versus what we call AMA, it's the Appeals Modernization Act, of which RAMP was a part of, in 2019, February of 2019, the process changed so that decisions that essentially were new decisions past February of 2019 were in the new system, and the other ones were in the legacy. And the, fortunately, the law didn't shut down the legacy appeals. You just ended up staying in legacy unless you chose to go in AMA. So initially, they put a lot of emphasis on AMA because they wanted to meet their target deadlines. And then they got way behind on legacy, so they shifted resources. And this is the thing, when people have asked me for years about, you know, why are things so messed up at the VA? It's because they just shift resources all the time. And one gets behind and then they shift resources to catch up, and then they get behind and shift resources. So yes, I would say that. However, there's, you know, multiple reasons why you can request for an expedite. And 2 years, like, when did it come back down from the CAVC? You said 2 years, or they're telling you it's going to be 2 years?
No, it just, next month it'll be 2 years. And they told me, my attorney said he thought it would be handled 6 months ago.
Yeah. I would have said a year and a half to 2 years.
A couple examples of other clients that had similar timetables. He said it's not even a good indicator of what's possible or an indicator of what will happen in the future. You just have to take it on a month by month. In this case, year by year basis, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Well, let me tell you this. Let me tell you this really quickly that I think it might help is that I kind of nerd out a little bit on the board report to Congress. So if you just Google search Board of Veteran Appeals report to Congress, they're all public there. And within them, they have timelines where they're showing that this case took, that these cases are taking an average amount of time of these many days. And if you go to that on the right hand side, you'll see appeals matrix metrics, and it'll tell you like how many they've done, what the average wait time is, that kind of thing for both appeals, for legacy and new appeals. Again, okay. They're ballpark, but they're the statistics that they report to Congress. So it's not like they're goals that they never meet. It's the actual statistics as well.
Okay. So my other question is, have you noticed something in particular about PTSD versus claims for traumatic brain injuries? I have been involved in the business of putting claims forth for things that I've been challenged by in my military service. Mm-hmm. But it seems that the one area that the VHA or the VBA does not want to put their hands on is this idea of traumatic brain injuries, unless it's very obvious. Mm-hmm. I would say that in my own particular situation, I was in an airborne unit, and I served as a paratrooper, we'll call it the 82nd Airborne Division, and that I had suffered a series of traumatic brain injuries, but they were very mild in nature, but they had a devastating effect on the way that I performed my duties while I was in uniform, and then later on in life. I didn't even recognize the kind of challenges I was having until one of my employers was saying, you know what, you're just not coming, you're not showing up for work, and you're fighting with your fellow employees, and it just led to a rabbit hole that I don't even want to get into the details about. But I was just wondering, the VHA keeps making note of the great job that they're doing in treating PTSD, and they are. They're trying all kinds of different avenues and different effects, but the one thing that they don't seem to want to touch is traumatic brain injuries, because I don't think that they know what they're doing in that particular area, unless it's very obvious, you know, like a guy got a portion of his head blown off or had shrapnel and it affected his brain. And those effects are very obvious, but those slight, mild traumatic brain injury cases, particularly in the way that I got them, are, you know, you could get into a fight or get into a car accident, and it just changes you. You could slip and fall and trip and smack your head, and you're functionally, you're just not the same person anymore.
Yeah, definitely.
And I was just wondering if that was coming up more in your cases, or are you seeing these kinds of things come play themselves out in the arena of claims for people who are looking for assistance?
Absolutely. And I probably have more to say about that than I can before we go to a break. But okay. I don't know if you want to stick with me through the break and we can talk about it, or you just want to kind of listen in after we get back from the break. I'd love to keep you on if you're willing to.
Sure, I'll talk to you.
Okay. So we're talking here with Max. He's a veteran himself. He's been dealing with a little bit of TBI, PTSD. We are taking our calls live. If you would like to kind of chime in on this conversation, Star, I know, will have a bit to say about this as well when we get back. If you want to contact us at 800-222-5222, I will say, Max, that there is there's a lot of things with regards to TBI versus PTSD that one of the biggest frustrations that we're experiencing is that the VA is always trying to combine them and treat them from a compensation perspective as the same thing. But when we come back, we're going to address some of those issues and how you can navigate that process. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC. We'll be right back.
The men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Good evening. Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We are chatting this evening. We're taking calls live and chatting this evening about anything related to VA disability compensation. As I mentioned before, we went to the break. We were talking with Max, who is a call-in from San Diego, and had a couple of questions. And one that is kind of lights a fire underneath me a little bit is the whole TBI PTSD, and I hesitate to say TBI versus PTSD. It certainly isn't one or the other. One of the things that I'll tell you is when it comes to, and Star is also here as a co-host. She's a U.S. Air Force veteran, has been through this process, very familiar with what I'm about to talk about as well. So please feel free to chime in, Star. But okay. One of the key things with TBI versus PTSD is if you go to a examination, so when you file a claim for, and welcome back, Max, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay, great. So if you go for a psychological exam, whether it's PTSD, you know, bipolar depression, anxiety, any of those things, the VA is going to fill out, or the examiner at the VA Medical Center or one of their outsourced contractors is going to fill out a questionnaire based upon your symptoms called Disability Benefits Questionnaire. One of the questions on the first page is, has the veteran also experienced a TBI? And that's important. They don't really go into much more than that. But what's important about that is there are a lot of symptoms of TBI that cross over with the same type of symptoms of PTSD. And because of that, the next question essentially is, can the examiner distinguish between what symptoms are related to the TBI and what symptoms are related to the PTSD or anxiety or depression or other mental health? And if the examiner says no, they can't, like they can't decide. So just to give you some examples here, some crossovers. Memory and concentration issues, those are symptoms that show up under TBI and PTSD. Mood changes, feeling depressed or anxious, difficulty sleeping more than usual. So those are things that cross over. And if the medical examiner is saying, I can't decide which symptoms are related to TBI or which symptoms are PTSD, then the VA compensation department, who are non-medical professional, they are going to look at those that medical opinion and say, we're just going to combine these two. And so rather than you maybe getting 70% for your PTSD and 30% for your TBI, they just say you get 70% for PTSD with TBI. And so you almost lose some ratings in there, which is super frustrating. So we spend a lot of time with some of our experts sitting down with a medical professional and saying, okay, is this related to one or the other? Symptoms of TBI that are kind of outside of the PTSD, things like headaches, but you could separately be rated for headaches as well. Things like dizziness, loss of speech, problems with speech, nausea, vomiting. And as you mentioned before we went into the break, those are a lot of things. These TBI symptoms, and this is just something I Google searched at the Mayo Clinic, is listing them, are all significantly going to affect your ability to function on a day-to-day basis. And I think that that's kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, Max, but I think that's what you were somewhat alluding to, of these symptoms that come up from TBI. And it's not always a one incident event that was, you know, mind-blowing, literally. It can be a bunch of little traumatic brain injuries along the way that over and over again, kind of like concussion, football players being hit in the head by concussion, you know, getting concussions. Over time, it can create more of a damage than they all seem like, quote unquote, little incidents, but they are affecting you on a long-term basis. I don't want to speak for you, Max, but feel free to step in.
Sure. When I was, I'm 55 now. When I was about 7 years old, I received my first TBI. prior to getting in like second grade. And I got to tell you, they say that brain plasticity, as the term has been known to be out there in the world, it's the ability of the brain to bounce back after a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I was smashed right in my prefrontal cortex region. There's a big scar on my forehead. And I got smashed in the mouth, too. Broke out a tooth and gave me a nice scar to remind me for the rest of my life when I look mm-hmm. in the mirror. But it was only until after I joined the military at the age of 18 did my personality start to change, especially out of jump school and then getting into my airborne unit, did I realize that I start to see these changes, but I never attributed to anything that I had going on. And when I entered the military, you have to go through like a medical examination.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me, what's that scar on your forehead? And I was like, well, I had an accident as a child and I just kind of bounced back from it. I didn't perform well in school. I couldn't write an essay to save my life. I hated reading books, mm-hmm. but somehow I made it into the ranks of our veterans, and it just seemed to be a place for me to hang out for a few years. It taught me a lot about life, but I was still struggling, especially when I got out. It seemed that I was, my participation in uniform, I was lucky to walk away with an honorable discharge because I was really pushing the envelope on what they were willing to tolerate from my behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I got out of service, it was like I didn't know what to do with myself, and I wasn't really self aware enough to just say, hey, there's some kind of problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Even to this day, I remember moving from LA to San Diego in like 2003, and I was staying with a friend, and my friend's father said, you know, you should check into the VA. You should get into their healthcare system and see if they can help you with any problems that you might be experiencing. And he's an old Navy guy from World War II. So I went down to San Diego to La Jolla and went to the hospital, and I let them do an evaluation on me, like the kind you were talking about with the mm-hmm. paperwork and stuff. But right then and there, they didn't even want to recognize TBI as a legitimate means of you having difficulties.
Right.
It took years for all the wounded and the guys who got chewed up in the wars, Afghanistan mm-hmm. and Iraq, to just really recognize that TBI is a serious business, not the kind sure. of the explosive the shockwave that you get when you're exposed to an IDE, but just little things that can affect you in negative ways. I never served in combat. I still suffered from that condition.
Mm-hmm.
And PTSD was another issue that was non-combat related.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am today. I'm not struggling with cases anymore. We pretty much got past the claims. I only have the one that I mentioned earlier in this program. But I'm telling you right now, even to this day, as close as I am to the VA healthcare system down here in San Diego, they don't have a program set up for treating TBI, especially mild traumatic brain injuries.
Right.
They never talk about supplementation. They never talk about any kinds of comprehensive program to get people's brains up and running. You have to be either mild or a very obvious severe case of TBI before they'll even think about treating you. But they'd rather just throw money at you and say, you know what, have a good life. That's where you're at. You're just going to have to deal with it on your own. So you have to go into the private sector and seek out medical attention there.
Yeah.
And try to educate yourself and be up to speed of what's going on in the world. And the fact that they even gave me a 70% rating for TBI, I can even tell you of a case that my particular situation changed. I hate to go on about myself so much, but I had a TBI rating of 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a TDIU at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, inside the bureaucracy, they decided to raise my PTSD to 70% from 50% and mm-hmm. reduce my TBI to zero. I said,
yeah.
Now you're able to cross the line with 100% disability rating.
Well, and that's
like,
essentially...
What?
That's one of the ways in which they, you know, manipulate it. Like I was talking about when we first came back from the break, of they essentially basically like kind of try to combine them, where they say we can't distinguish between one symptom, you know, the symptoms related to one or the other. So they provide this combination, which is incredibly frustrating. And it really, like you said, takes typically a private medical doctor who is, you know, that's the kind of thing that we work with to help make that distinguish between those symptoms, to say, you know, slurred speech is not necessarily related to PTSD, but that's related to TBI. Headaches may not be related, you know, to separate headaches. They may be related to your TBI. So it's a frustrating thing to navigate for sure. And I feel like, what's happening with TBI is it's like the VA is slow to catch up on things. You know, they were slow to catch up on Agent Orange. They're slow to catch up on PTSD. Now they're being slow to catch up on TBI and the burn pits, you know, so it's always kind of, they're behind the eight ball on a regular basis. And, you know, working where in the industry that Star and I work in, it's, you know, we just keep things on appeal as much as we possibly can, because eventually the VA is going to figure it out. And we hope, you know, but I agree with you on the therapy. You know, there's a lot of things with TBIs, flotation therapy, things that you can, those again are all in the private sector, but have had some relatively positive results, you know, in some of the studies that are done. And, you know, other people, they are truly mild TBI symptoms where it may be, you know, you have a sensory thing, but you don't have slurred speech or concentration or memory issues. It's almost like it's different for everybody as to what symptoms that kind of draw to the surface. And I think it also has partially to do with what you also have. So if you have the TBI and the PTSD, you're going to have different symptoms coming from the TBI versus, you know, if you don't have the PTSD and you just had a head injury. But there's all kinds of things. I have a very good friend who's an occupational therapist who works with people with brain injuries, and she's always been a very interesting conversation since I've got into working in this industry. But I 100% agree with you in that the VA treats it weird. They're not really great about treatment, but highly, highly encourage anybody out there who's struggling with that, that there are help, there is help in the private sector, and not always necessarily stuff that you have to pay for. There are organizations that help support treatment through those things. So, you know, use your Google, use the internet to jump on that and, you know, find some help. Definitely always like a perspective of don't give up. You know, it doesn't just have to be, this is how it's always going to be. There's always advancement in the medical, and there's even advancement in the way that VA treats stuff. It just takes a while. So thank you so much for the call, Max. I feel like this is a really important topic, not one that I was planning to jump into, but very timely, I think. So I really appreciate the call in. Star, do you have anything quick to add? I know we're coming up against a break. Do you have anything quick to add?
I do have a few things, but one of the main things that I would like to say is that he's correct on the TBI. My grandfather, I helped him with that. He was in a vehicle accident with the TBI back in 1963, and it took until 2015 to finally get that even service connected because, you know, they weren't willing to do it beforehand. So it is something that I have looked into and dealt with quite a bit. And he brought up a lot of different things during his conversation that I would like to talk about after the break, if possible.
Sure, absolutely. Max, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you join us again. And we're going to go into a break here. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We're taking our calls live at 800-222-5222 if you'd like to join us when we get back.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Good evening. This is Amanda Manier. I am the host here of The Veterans Voice on 790 KABC. We're broadcasting live this evening. I'm a veteran advocate and a managing attorney at the Veterans Law Group. And basically what we're doing on every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock is we're chatting about all things veterans, giving veterans a voice out there of helping them with their disability claims process, which is what we do at the Veterans Law Group, but also sometimes just highlighting organizations that are helping veterans and then bringing veterans on and telling their stories. So this evening, we've been talking a little bit about TBI and PTSD. My co-host this evening is one of the paralegals in my office. Her name is Star. She is a U.S. Air Force veteran. And just before we went into the break, I was kind of giving my, you know, legal perspective in talking with Max from San Diego about the way that the VA over the years has taught PTSD, now TBI, and kind of stumbling, I would say, in that process, similar to the way that they had stumbled with PTSD in the past, with Agent Orange in the past, and still stumbling with that, let's just be honest. And then the burn pits, which are all things that are affecting many, many veterans in the country, and the VA is a little slow on the uptake. And Star, before we went to break, you were wanting to kind of chime in a little bit about the TBI and PTSD. So I'm going to turn it over to you for a few minutes.
Thank you. So, yes, I did want to bring up between the difference with the PTSD and the TBI. I feel like the VA, you know, they really aren't going to take too close of a look necessarily when it comes to differentiating. And so that's where it comes up to the veteran or the attorneys that are helping the veterans to take a look at that. So the difference with the TBI and the PTSD, I think, is extremely important, because TBI, with it being such a new, like, noticed disability, is that the structural damage that has happened to the brain because of the TBI might not be detectable by current technology. There's plenty of prior clients that we've had and veterans that I have known of that, you know, have been able to get the VHA, the healthcare side of it, to do a scan on their brain, but it comes back, you know, without any different changes or results. And at that point, it's looking at, okay, well, what are the other symptoms? Like, if we can't see that there was actual damage from it or notice it at this point in time because the technology isn't up to speed with that, then I think it's extremely important for veterans with TBIs and PTSD to know, or even depression, anxiety, other symptoms along the lines of PTSD, that the subjective symptoms versus the cognitive, like, the cognitive symptoms is a big change to what ratings you might get if they're going to separate it or not. Mm-hmm. So the subjective symptoms are the ones that usually are going to overlap, which is the behavioral functions. And so for people with TBIs, I know it's extremely difficult. My grandfather had one from his vehicle accident, and his memory is not always what it should have been after that accident in service. And so it's really great for veterans to make notes before they go into the CMP exams, because if they can take something with them, it helps them from getting distracted during the CMP exam or forgetting something that they might want to bring up. So I always recommend to every veteran to always take notes and take that in with them to the CMP exams, and to kind of notice just on a daily basis before you have that exam, okay, well, is there a triggering event that happens when I get upset, or is it just coming from nowhere? So that's kind of a way to get it across to the CMP examiner that it's more of a TBI that's setting off a certain type of, like, if there is a trigger that's causing the different type of behavior that they're looking for, or if it's just coming from nowhere. And another thing that was brought up during Max's story of his own incident is that he had one prior to service, and I thought it would just be really good to put out there that you can still have some type of disability prior to service and be able to get a compensation for it if the service aggravated that disability. So if they made it worse, they're still responsible for a compensation rating based off of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up. Just a reminder that we are live this evening and we're taking your calls. If you would like to chime in, it doesn't have to be about TBI or PTSD, just anything veteran related. It's 800-222-5222. You're listening to Amanda with a Veteran's Voice and my co-host Star. Primarily, one of the things that I love that you brought that up is that is the whole thing about making notes. And in addition to that, it also helps a lot, spouses or family members, parents, anybody who is around you on a regular basis, to go to those examinations with you. One of the things that I've experienced over the years is that that third party, the spouse, the mom, the dad, even the child at times, or the grandchild in the case of your grandfather, you have a unique perspective because you can see their behavior that they may be not always be very recognizing that they have. In addition to that, when it comes to the PTSD side of it, or even the TBI, you know, when I'm prepping a veteran for a hearing, and the hearing is where they're going to go give testimony, and I hate that they call it a hearing because it shouldn't be called a hearing. It's really just a meeting with the decision maker on your case. It's not anything like a court-related environment. We should talk about that on a future episode, talk about hearings. Is that this is the time, one, to be honest about how it is on your worst day. And people, while you're in the, you know, people who join the military and go through the military and veterans, I don't think that ever gets completely washed out of you if you're taught to suck it up. And don't, exactly. you know, don't get into talking about how, well, I can't remember things at times and I get mad at my wife and I throw things sometimes and I get mad at the person on the freeway and I yell at them sometimes. You know, there's things that are symptoms, you know, we call them symptoms, but they're behaviors that can be, you know, not something you necessarily want to be that open about. But I look at it as this is the time when you're asking the VA for help for the injury that you incurred, the symptoms and the struggle, you know, it's all affecting your earning capability is really why it comes down to money, is that whether or not that's affecting your day-to-day life, that we as civilians made a promise to you that we would take care of you. So taking your spouse or your parent or your child or somebody who can is an observer of your behavior into those examinations with you can be hugely helpful. We've also done it in circumstances at a hearing where we asked the veteran to leave the room and let their spouse or their family member speak openly without feeling like, you know, they were uncomfortable saying it in front of them. We've done, you know, you've been at hearings before that we've done that with some of our cases. And that just helps that spouse, that family member, somebody who's an observer can be hugely helpful in getting the symptoms on the record. But you don't really want to always wait till the hearing because you may not have a hearing, but you always want to get it in that CNP exam when you go in. Anything else you want to chime in on that?
It makes a huge difference. Yeah. It makes a big, big difference. And you can see it on the spouses or, you know, the friend or significant other that's with the veteran at the time when the veteran steps out, they kind of take a breath and they're like, okay, you know, I know it's going on record. However, like, it's difficult sometimes to say it in front of them. And I had the same thing with my grandfather when I had to do it. But sometimes it's just something that needs to be said, and it's the time and the place to make it happen. It's kind of like, let's do it now so I don't have to keep doing it in the future over and over and over again.
Exactly, because once it's in the record, it's in the record. One of my favorite stories about that was a sweet little Southern couple that I had been married since before Vietnam. And he had struggled since he got back from Vietnam, hugely struggled with PTSD. And he was only rated at a 50%. And he had run his own business. And they were saying, yeah, well, you ran your own business. You did fine. But really, you look at his earnings statement, it was like $8,000 a year. And when I was prepping them for a hearing, they were always on the phone at the same time. You remember your mom and dad used to do that, of they would both get on the phone on the same line in the house.
Exactly.
And, you know, yes. he went to go get something from the garage. And she says to me, Amanda, it's so much worse than he says it is. So I was like, oh, okay. You know, so we did that kind of thing where we had her testify without him in the room, and she was much more open, and they were able to get him what he needed. He ended up getting rated at 100%. So we're about to go into our final break for this evening. And, this is Amanda Minear with the Veterans Voice. I'm here with my co-host, Star, who is a paralegal in our office. And we initially kind of jumped into this evening wanting to talk about TDIU and unemployability and navigating that process. But I love this, that we were able to address some of the questions. So if you want to join us when we get back, our number here is 800-522-522. I'm going to get the number wrong. 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-KABC. We'll be right back after this break.
To be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Good evening, this is Amanda Minear. I am the host here of the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC. Veteran advocate and managing attorney at the Veterans Law Group, and we help veterans with their VA disability claims, and sometimes that's the topic of our shows every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock, and sometimes we just interview veterans and tell their stories or organizations that are helping veterans. Tonight, we are taking our calls live, addressing some questions. We've been talking a little bit about TBI and PTSD and how the VA is kind of, you know, bumpy, handling those things as they're navigating the road of how to deal with those things. VA is literally a little slow on the uptake, but I'm sure that's no surprise to any of the veterans that are listening in this evening. We have Star, who is with us as a co-host this evening. She is a paralegal in our office and a U.S. Air Force veteran. And I understand that before we launch anything here, as our the last segment is usually a little shorter of a segment. I understand that we have Lieutenant Colonel Martin, who has a question. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I'm a second-time caller and Veterans Voice group of veterans, usually at Long Beach VA. Daryl's our POC. But tonight we have one of our majors who's in the Army about to retire, but he has service-connected disabilities, and he's going through a divorce. And he's going to be retiring and going through the IDES process, I think is what it is, where they do the VA and the Army retirement at the same time. But he has just since been notified that he's now going to be going through a divorce. And the question was on his military retirement and or VA benefits, if there's a divorce after a 20-year marriage, is the wife going to be entitled to the compensation for either, if he went a medical discharge in the Army, they call it an MEB, Medical Evaluation Board, and if he goes through that process and instead of his retirement, he is awarded a disability in the Army proper, and would she be entitled to any of that disability compensation from the Army? And then after he's out, if he went to the VA, would the ex-wife be entitled to go after any of his VA benefits? And I want to thank you very much. We listen to you religiously.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And if there's any, you know, topics you'd like to hear us bring up and talk about, sometimes, as I mentioned, we do pre-recorded calls that we can just very, you know, dig into how to deal with extra scheduler consideration or any of those things that you might be familiar with. What I'm going to tell you is that when it comes down to a situation like this, you have a competing interest of federal law and state law. So divorce, things related to divorce and separation of property and that kind of thing is state law related. So when you file for divorce, you're dealing with the county, this county of Orange County or Los Angeles County, but it's the state laws that are at play. When it comes to VA disability compensation and retirement from the VA, that's federal law. So it's a little, I'm not going to be able to 100% answer your question other than maybe point you in the right direction. It comes down to when they distribute assets at the time that the assets, you know, at the time of the distribution because of the divorce, they're going to look at whatever assets that they have. And that is up to a judge or a settlement agreement between the spouses to determine how that is split. If that, if they come to a settlement agreement, it doesn't really go to a judge other than to approve it. And so it really comes down to what they decide on. I can tell you though, that from a federal law perspective, there are, you know, spousal benefits really only apply when they're married. So if there was like a 20-year history of, like, we've worked with claims that have taken 20 years, not that we had them for 20 years, but the veteran filed in 2004 and we picked them up 5-6 years ago and we're able to get them. That's going to be a value. If they were married the entire time and then divorced this year, the judge is, at the local state judge is probably going to look out, well, she should have been entitled to some of those benefits. Those should have been probably community property. But after the divorce is happening, or after the divorce has happened, or a separation has been put in place, the federal government doesn't look at ex-spouses as having benefits related to disability compensation. They may related to retirement, but again, that is going to come down to what the judge says on a state local authority to say, she was with you for 20 years, she's entitled to part of your benefits. But it's not like a statute that says, yes, the spouse gets this and he loses this. It's a little bit more, unfortunately, the common attorney answer is, well, it all depends. So it depends a lot on what the judge says. And again, those competing, you see the same kind of thing that comes up with child support issues, where we get contacted by people saying, well, the state of Texas is trying to garnish my disability for my child support. And it's like, well, it depends on how the state of Texas looks at that money and whether or not you designate it as a federal benefit to you alone. So it's not an easy answer, but it's something that he's definitely going to need to navigate. And I will say it's probably going to be a little bit easier if the divorce happens like at the time, right around the time of his retirement. And as he's going in the disability process, his disability is going to be a little bit more protected. Does that make sense?
That's exactly the situation, because he retires in December and she's wanting $4,200 a month from him, and his retirement will be somewhere around half of his base pay because he did 20 years of active duty.
So his retirement's going to be...
The state and the federal differences are the problems he's worried about.
Yeah, so he will probably have to navigate it with the retirement. He probably won't have to do much of navigating with a spouse on his disability compensation if he pursues that, which he can get both.
What if he waives his retirement and elects to take it as disability compensation? Let's just say, for example, soldier makes X dollars for a base pay. When he gets divorced, when he goes into the MEB disability process, then the Army turns his money from retirement benefits at 50% of his base pay to, he's going to get at least 50% of his base pay, but as compensation with a bump to increase for the actual disabilities the soldier has suffered during, you know, deployments and combat. This is one soldier that had, you know, a female medic that died in his hands when they were, blown up, and the guy's really got problems. Mm-hmm. And he's got a combat badge, and it's going to be sad to see that when he goes and he retires, that the divorce is going to take, if it's $4,200 and he's only going to make about $5,000 retirement.
He should be able to at this point in time, because there was a period of time where you couldn't get both, and then there was a graduation into it, and now you can get disability compensation and your retirement. And there's some ways to navigate that. And I would, do you have our contact to our office? Because I have the perfect person to put you in contact with. He used to do a lot of family law, and he's out of Utah, but he's going to have a general idea. He's a 20-year military attorney and understands definitely advising veterans on how to, like, what elections they should make as they come out of the military. Our number at the office is 888-811-0523. Or you can email info@veteranslaw.com, and I can give you that contact. He would spend 10 minutes on the phone with you and help point you in the right direction.
The guy, the soldier's from Utah. So it's
perfect. Yeah, email us, and I'll get you hooked up. All right. Thank you so much, Lieutenant Colonel Martin. I appreciate it. This is Amanda with the Veterans Voice. We will see you guys next week, every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 o'clock on 790 KABC.